Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Andrew Honecke. Our guest this week is Maine Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, who joins us to talk about the current state of the Farm Bill and the bill's future. But first, here's this week's headlines. The U.S. has stopped inspecting avocados and mangoes from a state in Mexico after two USDA employees were assaulted and temporarily held captive during field inspections, according to the U.S. Embassy in Mexico City. American Ambassador to Mexico, Ken Salazar, says he's closely following the situation and is working with state and federal officials in Mexico. He plans to travel to the specific state next week to meet with Mexican officials and address safety and other issues. The U.S. imports 80% of Mexico's avocados, according to USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service. This state is responsible for 73% of Mexico's avocado production. The latest Congressional Budget Office forecast for the federal budget and farm bill programs is not favorable for lawmakers trying to pass a farm bill. Republicans on the House Ag Committee are looking for $50 billion worth of Commodity Credit Corporation funds for commodity program increases in the bill. The report estimated there would only be $12 billion available through funding, far less than what Republicans need. CBO also lowered cost projections for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, revised cost estimates for farm programs, and increased its estimate of how much money will be given to farmers and ranchers for disaster assistance. And finally, there's a stalemate on Capitol Hill as Congress is slowly running out of time to get a farm bill done this year. Senate Ag Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow told us last week that she doesn't think the House bill will get enough support on the floor and that she doesn't want to send a bill out of the Senate that would have a similar fate. However, House Ag Chair Glenn Thompson remains optimistic and hopes his bill will get to the House floor as quickly as it can because there's urgency to avoid an extension. Congresswoman Shelley Pingree is a member of the House Ag Committee. We asked her about the bill's future.
There's still a lot of complications in getting it over the finish line. I mean, I feel like everyone is anxious to finish the farm bill. We all have priorities in it that we want to see completed. But there are still huge differences between the Republican and Democratic versions of it. And I think, there's still a lot of uncertainty. It's been a really tough year to get anything through the House. So it's hard for me to imagine what the pathway looks like unless we can come together with more agreement before we put it on the House floor.
And I do want to touch on that a little bit more. Minority Leader Jeffries and Chairwoman Stabenow both pushed Democrats to stay united and maybe wait for a little longer for a bill that was more bipartisan before you guys put your full support behind that. However, four of your fellow Democrats did end up voting for Chairman Thompson's bill. So are you concerned that more Democrats could end up doing that when the bill gets to the floor?
I'm sure Chairman Thompson is hoping that there will be more Democrats. Unfortunately, he has the same issue that he would lose some Republicans. Usually on the House floor, there are some Republicans who don't vote for any farm bills or won't like some of the spending in the bill. So there's a complicated equation in getting it to the floor. As to the four Democrats who voted for it, you know, everybody has to make a decision that's right for their district. And I know a lot of people, you know, we're agonizing over what's the right decision to do. Many wanted to hold back because they wanted to see if we could get a better bill. And others just felt like they wanted to let the farmers in their district know, like, hey, we're trying to get a bill done. We're trying to cooperate. I think we all generally agree on that. You know, we're trying to look for ways to make it work together. But I don't think that the votes are there yet. And even if they were able to get the bill to the House floor, it wouldn't pass in the Senate, so we'd still be in the same bind. And I would rather see us, you know, work out some of these big challenges that we have right now before it goes to the floor.
I do want to follow up on that. You know, if the bill does end up passing, what needs to happen to get more Democrats to vote in favor of it when it gets to the House floor?
Well, as you know, there are a lot of Democrats who won't vote for any changes to the SNAP benefits. You know, right now it's $6 a day. Some of these changes would decrease the possibility of increasing that amount. $6 a day per person isn't a lot of money to put food on the table. There's a lot of support from farmers, of course, who like the SNAP benefit program because it's, you know, it's more business for our American farms. So there's that. I think that taking away the secretary's authority on the CCC, again, that's kind of insider baseball for a lot of people. But when you look at the range of things that Secretary Vilsack has been able to use that for, whether it was the supply chain problems, getting us through the pandemic, or the fertilizer shortage, trade issues. You know, there's something for every state that happens in there. And it's one of the few ways you can really deal with some of the huge problems that we face in agriculture when you have a Congress that has a hard time acting. So I sit on the Agriculture Appropriations Committee. So I know full well, it's very hard to get money through that committee. And sometimes the secretary has to have the ability to act. And that's what the CCC authority has done. What GT does in this bill is he takes away the authority from the secretary, and he also uses that money for reference prices and other things. So you've taken away the authority, which is a problem, and you're using the money, which the CBO doesn't even necessarily agree it's all there. It's not as if this is kind of a Democratic priority. I think it's like a lot of things. You might find a momentary fix by doing something, but you might set things up poorly for whoever the next administration is.
We'll be right back with more from Congresswoman Pingree right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Spring floods, fall floods,
there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. The most recent Congressional Budget Office report says federal deficits are getting worse. Congresswoman Pingree doesn't think it's the biggest factor from delaying farm bill action.
I'm sorry to say this, but I find often, Congress uses the deficit as an arguing point when it wants to oppose something. But if it wants to get something done, then it pretends it doesn't exist. So it's always a looming conversation. And I think we're always looking for ways to resolve that. But I don't know that specifically will be the stumbling block as much as some of the other issues that we've been talking about.
And this is an election year, so kind of wanted to get your thoughts on how will the farm bill process change next year if Democrats regain control of the House?
Look, Democrats aren't perfect either, but I think that we've been more realistic about a farm bill being bipartisan and that you have to find, we're not as likely to bring a bad bill to the floor just to message it, only to have to go back to the drawing board to do it again, which I feel is a little bit of the process that we're in with the Republican control of the House. It's maybe just stylistic. I don't know. I mean, I applaud GT as a chair. I think he's, he's reached out to Democratic members every step of the way, and I totally appreciate him about that. I think he's been a good committee chair. He brought the committee to my district, and obviously we don't always see eye to eye on a lot of these things. But I don't want to say that everything about this process is flawed or that Democrats are better or different. You know, these are complicated bills to get through, and both parties struggle with trying to figure out where our bipartisanship is.
I do want to touch on one additional topic before we wrap up and want to get your thoughts on the organic sector. So how is it currently doing, and is inflation hurting consumer demand?
Organics tend to be priced higher, and that's a great thing for the farmers who are involved in organics. It's a big part of agriculture in my state, and it's really been beneficial for those farmers who have made the investment to be certified organic farmers. Interestingly, demand doesn't seem to have dropped. The sector is about $70 billion now. It's 15% of the produce that gets sold, and there is a tie-in with consumers who are increasingly concerned about climate change, saying, you know, organics is a very climate friendly practice because it focuses so much on soil health. And that's a lot of what we work on with our sort of climate friendly practices. So I think that there's a certain advantage going on there with the consumers. You've also seen a huge expansion, not just in the Whole Foods kind of upper end grocery stores, but, you know, Walmart and a lot of the chains all have organic sections now, because increasingly, you know, people are worried about what they're feeding their kids. They're hearing more and more about ultra processed foods and what impact that might have on our health. And so I think there is a kind of countervailing pressure.
Congresswoman Pingree, thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Nice to talk with you.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, our Jake Sikowski has more on the decline of USDA spending on food and nutrition assistance programs in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
For federal nutrition assistance programs, national spending soared during COVID and has been on the decline ever since. This is for programs like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, nutrition assistance for women, infants, and children, WIC, and other child nutrition programs. Federal spending for these programs has totaled $166.4 billion in the fiscal year 2023. This chart shows USDA food assistance spending since 1970. Total spending has been down 13% at $191.1 billion in 2022. And in 2023, SNAP spending fell 9% from the previous year's amount to $112.8 billion, despite increased participation and maximum benefit levels. Spending on child nutrition programs like the National School Lunch Program and the Summer Food Service Program totaled $26.9 billion, dropping 24% from the previous year. And spending on WIC totaled $6.6 billion, an 11% increase from 2021 to 2022, reflecting more participation and food costs per participant. However, like all federal programs, it declined in 2023. And many are asking why the decreases. The USDA says the decline in SNAP occurred because of the nationwide end of emergency allotments, which has temporarily raised all recipients' benefits. And for child nutrition programs, 2023 marked the first year without federal waivers, allowing schools to receive free meals to all students, as the free meal service expired at the end of June 2022. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel is going to focus on what's happening with the Farm Bill. Excited to be joined by farm policy consultant Ferd Heffner and Chase Adams with the National Pork Producers Council. And Ferd, I wanted to start with you first, sir. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the Farm Bill making it out of the House Agriculture Committee, and then how big of a deal is it that four Democrats broke their ranks and voted in favor of the bill?
Any sign of progress is good news. So getting a bill moving is certainly part of the process, the beginning step. The downside is that, you know, it's a bill and it's been reported out of committee, but it's a bit of a mirage because it's not paid for. It's short tens of billions of dollars. So it's a starting point, but just barely. And that problem has been magnified now by the Congressional Budget Office coming out with their new baseline for this fiscal year just this week. And, you know, reaffirms that they're short by tens of billions of dollars. So, but anyway, it's a start. I wasn't terribly surprised by the four Democrats that voted yes. I thought there could have potentially been a couple of more, actually. You know, it goes actually to the issue of the bill not being paid for. It's great to have lots of benefits across all the titles of the farm bill in the bill, but at the end of the day, when this becomes law, it's going to be paid for. And so either those benefits get downsized or pay for gets created that actually works.
And Chase, I do want to bring you into the discussion now, kind of piggybacking off of that last point that Ferg made. You know, Chairman Thompson wants to get this bill across the House floor, but the Congressional Budget Office came out this week and said that it isn't fully funded yet. So how do you think he's going to be able to overcome that?
You know, I think Chairman Thompson should really be commended for working on a farm bill and getting this first step done when a lot of folks had given up on this really weeks, months, nearly a year ago on this process. So Chairman Thompson has found a way to both balance the needs of nutrition and the needs of the farm economy. And, you know, the 13% of the farm bill that really matters to pork producers, to wheat growers, corn growers across the country. We know this is a first step in what is a very long process and what will be a negotiation with the Senate and very different approaches. So while the CBO score is certainly a setback, I don't think that we should lose sight of the fact, you know, the end goal that we're going for here, which is for industries like ours, like the pork industry, we need to get this farm bill done this year, right? We've got to find a solution. We've got African swine fever just off the coast in the Dominican Republic. We've got California Prop 12, which is creating chaos in the marketplace and will only expand as other states follow suit. We're going to find that pathway forward that both keeps a strong nutrition title, but also make sure that production ag has the tools that they need.
And this is an election year. I kind of want to get your thoughts on how this election process could change what's happening with the farm bill, specifically if one party gains control over Congress when the election is done.
We're going to have a lot of freshmen in place. We're going to have a lot of things that need to get done at the onset of a new Congress. So I'm personally afraid that one, farm bill isn't going to take the priority precedence that we would like it to. And two, I just don't see that new Congress being the place that we want to write farm policy, no matter how it shifts. I think no matter how it shifts, it's going to be on the margins either direction. No one's going to have a huge mandate, I don't expect. But we're going to have some challenges ahead if we have to write this farm bill in the 119th Congress.
We'll be right back with the rest of our panel discussion right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. Farm policy consultant Ferd Hefner says the partisanship in Congress is affecting the farm bill process.
I would say it's right up there with the 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014 Farm Bill, which took a long time to get created. Certainly radically different than 2018 when it got done in the year's time that it was supposed to be done. I agree that it will be difficult if any House changes majority, either or both of them change majority next year to really get going. So it does behoove people to get it done this year, if at all possible. However, time is fleeting and negotiations, actual negotiations with actual numbers, not fictitious ones, really need to take place sooner rather than later if there's going to be any chance of doing that.
Chase, I do want to bring you back into the discussion, sir. What are you hearing from producers across the country about the current state of the Farm Bill, and are they fed up with the partisanship that's going on Capitol Hill?
There's a lot of frustration by the process. I think you see that in some of the retirements, or a lot of the retirements that have been announced in the last year for members of Congress. So hopefully we can plow through this again. I really give a lot of kudos to Chairman Thompson and his team. He's been reaching across the aisle. I think Ag Committee is still one of the last bastions of bipartisanship and is continuing to show itself as such.
And I would like to wrap with both of you guys maybe answering this question. I'd like to start with you first, Ferd. Do you think that there's going to be an extension on this bill? And if that happens, how is that going to impact producers?
I think there will likely be an extension. I'd like to think that negotiations are starting as we speak and we could get to a bill, but September 30th isn't far away. So I would expect that we'll see an extension. I don't know how long an extension it will be. My advice would be to make it a year, but we shall see. And, the current Farm Bill is not broken and, will continue to serve agriculture fairly well. But there are certainly so many important things that could be done, perhaps paramount amongst them is to bring the Inflation Reduction Act money into the Farm Bill baseline. And the longer we take, if it goes through 2025, that will be a greatly reduced number, which would be a huge missed opportunity.
And Chase, just want to get your thoughts as well, sir.
I don't like talks around extensions because I think that does kind of start to breathe life into that possibility, and it makes it easy to take the path of least resistance. For us, again, we need to have a farm bill with the foreign animal disease, but particularly this is an opportunity to fix some issues like the issues that Proposition 12 has caused on interstate commerce. This is an opportunity to really set some things right. Like Ferd said, there's nothing wrong with the 2018 Farm Bill, but we can have some key improvements here. So we've got to keep the pressure on from the producer level all the way on up that we need to get this done and we need to get this right this year.
Certainly a lot to be paying attention to here as this Farm Bill process continues. Ferd, Chase, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, our Jake Sikowski has more on how much Americans spend eating out in this week's Map It Out.
Across America, spending dollars on food at restaurants or food away from home is on the rise. In 2023, food away from home purchases reached a record high nationally, averaging $3,923 per capita, but some states almost tripled that number. The map shows the average spending on food at restaurants by state. Green indicates states with the most spent, while light brown represents states with the least spending in restaurants. In 2023, Washington, D.C. spent the most out of all U.S. states, spending an average of $10,644 per capita, followed by Nevada at $6,907 and the island state of Hawaii, known for having the highest concentration of fast food restaurants at $6,697. For a less commuter-centric state like West Virginia, it held the lowest average of dollars spent in food at restaurants with $2,597, followed by Iowa with $2,789 and Wisconsin with $2,872. Possible factors for these outliers include tourism in all three areas, as well as interstate commuting employees in Washington, D.C. Tourists and commuters tend to spend more on food away from home than food at home, a relatively more costly form of food purchases in the states they are visiting. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Only the House is expected to be in session next week. The House Appropriations Committee will continue moving its fiscal 2025 spending bills out of committee. Next week, subcommittees are scheduled to consider measures that fund the Labor and Interior Departments, the EPA, and the Army Corps of Engineers, among others. And finally, the first presidential debate between President Biden and former President Donald Trump is scheduled for Thursday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.